Morning. If you had a do-over on a decision in your life, if you had a life mulligan, a relationship, that weekend in Vegas, whatever it is, like what would you want a do-over on? I mean, if you had the ability to say, all right, I made this choice, I made this decision, I wish I could go back and redo it, what would you choose it on? What would you choose to have a do-over on? I remember my wife and I were first married, we had just bought our first home, and money was tight. Obviously, we had no money. We were just getting by, you know, paycheck to paycheck. And her birthday was coming up, and so I had this idea. I was like, man, you know what she doesn't have? A really expensive watch. And so I bought her, like, a Movado watch, you know, and it's like a $600 watch. She opened the box, and she's like, which is not the reaction I was expecting. I was expecting to open the watch box and be like, what is this? You know? And she's realized, oh, this it's a expensive watch. You didn't have one, and I thought you would like it. She's like, how much does this cost? And I told her, and she's like, that's how much our mortgage is. Why did you get this watch for me? We don't have any money like this. I was like, I don't know. I just thought you'd like it. I don't know. You know, it was sounded like a good idea at the time. It was another time I bought her a puppy. She hadn't asked for one. That's true. I bought her a puppy once. She didn't ask for one, and she lived in an apartment where she couldn't have one. I'm just doing my best here, you know? And honestly, it's a real question, though. Like, if you had a chance for a do-over, if you had a life mulligan, what would you ask for? What decision would you do differently? I asked this on social media a couple days ago, and I thought it'd be sort of, you know, engaging and people get conversation going, and some of the answers were incredible. I mean, truly incredible. People who talked about how they wish they had worked less when their kids were young so they could enjoy those moments. Or people who talked about how they wish they had begun to work hard as a younger person because they've had to kind of dig themselves out of this sort of unmotivated life. People talked about choosing to raise their children to parent in one way or another and having that as a regret. And I got other messages talking about how, you know, relationships that they ruined and they wish they hadn't ruined. Or relationships someone else ruined that they probably should have seen it coming. And I got messages about people who had multiple abortions in their life that they think about on an almost daily basis. And it gave me kind of like a burden. Like I going into this series, I knew we were going to talk about the best question ever. I knew we were going to talk about how do we make decisions. But hearing these answers, it gave me this burden for people, for you, for all of us to make wise decisions, for all of us to walk through life with intentionality and to have our life matter and to have our life sort of be this on purpose thing and not just sort of wander through life bumping into things. It gave me this burden, this burning intense desire for all of us as a community to live lives on purpose. And so for the next 4 weeks, there's going to be this one question we're going to apply to our lives. And we're going to get to this question a little later. But I actually heard this question for the first time in 2005. And there's a book by the same title, The Best Question Ever. And it goes, and then a lot of this content over the next couple of weeks is based on this book that I read back in 2005. And then really this question and this sort of like perspective and this worldview on life, it's guided how I've lived my life basically since then. And so this is what we're going to do. We're going to talk about the best question ever. We're going to talk about what it means to live life on purpose with intentionality. And this whole thing, it's based on this passage in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 15 through 17. So we're going to be unpacking Ephesians 5, 15 through 17 for maybe the next month or so. But Ephesians 5, 15 through 17, it's written by this guy named Paul, and he's writing to the church at Ephesus, which is why it's Ephesians. And in this book, in his book to the church at Ephesus, this book, the Ephesians, by this guy named Paul, what he's doing is he goes into this book and he starts talking about how you should live. Like, all right, if you're a person of faith, how you should live, how you should approach your relationship with God, how you should understand your relationship with God, how your relationship with God should define how you interact with other people, like other groups of people who may be different than you. He talks about that for a couple chapters. And then in verse 5, he gives what the He's going to give us these verses we're going to talk about. And then after chapter 5, he goes into very specific relationships. All right, husbands and wives. All right, employees and employers. He kind of dives into like, all right, here's some big picture stuff. Here's a core value. Now here's how individual relationships, they should function. It really is sort of like, how do you live with other people in terms of your faith, if you're a person of faith, if you believe in God and all of this. And so Ephesians 5, 15 through 17 is kind of like a turn. It's kind of like the beating heart of this book on how he's asking you to live. And what I would say is, if you are a person of faith, then this is something that God has given you and he expects you to live with these things in mind. If you're a person who came in here skeptical, not sure what you think about God, sort of like kicking the tires on faith, what I would say to you is this is not something that you shouldn't feel pressure to like have this mastered, but you should consider if it could help you live a more flourishing life. Like help you, all right, consider and think through today and the next couple of weeks, is this something that could help me? If I listened to this and I applied this, would my life be better off for it? Because these are words that if you're a person of faith, you're expected to live by. If not a person of faith, I would just say consider it. Just listen with eyes open, heart open, ears open, and just listen to what it says. So Ephesians 5, 15 through 17 says this: be very careful then how you live. Not as unwise, but as wise. Making the most of every opportunity, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And what we have in these verses, we're going to unpack these verses for the next 4 weeks. And let's start with verse 15. It's kind of like look at them word by word, line by line. So verse 15 says this. It says, be careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise. Be careful there actually is this word in the original language that is best described as circumspect. Circumspect is like circum, circle. Spect means to look. And circumspect means to look around. It says, be careful. Be intentional. Look around as you're living. Don't just walk through blindly. Don't go through life and just do whatever feels natural in that moment or what feels good in that moment. No. Be very careful. Be very intentional. Walk circumspect. And it says how you live. Actually, the word live there in the original, it said walk. It's sort of like it's the manner in which you go through life. It's not live. It's not really walk. It's kind of this combination of the two. All of us go through life with a speed and a manner and a vibe and kind of like how we approach things and how we approach life and how we approach relationships. And this idea here of live, it's the manner in which you live. He's like, be very, very careful, be very, very intentional when you consider the way that you live, the manner in which you make your choices, the people you're around, the decisions you make, the things you buy or don't buy, the things you invest your time in or you don't invest your time in, the people you surround yourself with. Be very intentional. Be very careful about how it is you go through life. Not as unwise, but as wise. See, unwise people have to learn everything the hard way. Unwise people cannot learn from the experiences of others. Unwise people find themselves living and making a mistake, and then a little time goes by and they make that same mistake, and they live in this sort of like continuous loop of kind of history repeating itself. He says, but don't live that way. Be very, very careful how you live. Be very, very careful in the manner in which you go through life. Do so with wisdom. Be as wise, not as unwise. Verse 16 says this: making the most of every opportunity, because the days are evil. Actually, this making the most of opportunity, it actually, in a direct translation, would say redeem the time. And redeem isn't a word that we use all that often in our daily lives. It means to take repossession of, to take back, to gain it back into your possession. And what he's saying is, take your time back into your possession. It's the easiest thing on earth to waste time. It is, man. Like, think about how easy it is to waste time, to get distracted by something, to get bogged down, to spend large amounts of time doing things that are completely without value. He's saying, take that time back. Take repossession of that time. If you find yourself wasting time, then take that back. Don't let that slip away. You know, we can add more money to our accounts. We can add more friends to our relationships, but you cannot add more time to your life. It is your most unreplenishable asset you have in life. Your amount of time, it is limited. A rabbi, Abraham Joshua Heschel, in a book about time and Sabbath, says that we trade our time for stuff. And then we don't have time for that stuff. And you think about it, how much of our time we take and we trade for stuff. Stuff that we don't actually need, stuff that we want in the moment. You think, all right, well, this thing, it cost me this many dollars and it took me this long to get this many dollars. Was this a good trade? But we get caught up and I want this thing, I want this thing, I want to do that, and then we end up wasting time and we trade our time for things that if we stood back from it and said, man, is this worth it? Is this worth my time? No, it's not. He says, make the most of the opportunity. He says, because the days are evil. Honestly, if you just went with culture, if you just traded your time for your stuff and you just went with culture and you traded your life and you interacted with your life in the way that culture expects you to, you know, if you just sort of went with the flow of culture in terms of your finances, if you went with the flow of culture in terms of your relationships, they will not end up where you want them to. If you think about how culture functions in terms of relationships and how culture functions in terms of finances and life and how you move and how you live, this is not going to be how you intend to. Like if you have a goal set in mind for how you want, where you want to end up, who you want to be, the type of life that you want to live, and you say, I'm going to go with culture, I'm going to let it take me wherever it wants to, that is not where you will end up. You will end up somewhere else. He says, because the days are evil. This is actually my theory. This is not in the Bible. It's not like anything that like, this is just my sort of looking at life and society and culture. This is something that I feel like is noticeable, is that we're at a time right now when my truth is valued over some sort of like universal understanding of like the truth or whatever. But I feel like that is sort of like a pendulum swing that we experience. And this is just my opinion, my own theory. I feel like back in the 40s and 50s, I wasn't there for them, but as you look back at those times, there was this very sort of like understanding of there's how everyone lives, and it was like the Leave It to Beaver era, and it was like the sort of like that family, and there was nice and shiny in Pleasantville. And then the 60s and 70s came, and it wasn't this sort of like structured, regimented thing. 60s and 70s is more like free love, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. It's like, and then it gets from the truth to like my truth. And then you go like to the 80s and 90s, and it was the family values, family values, family values. The swing back to the truth. And then now in this sort of internet, social media era, it's sort of like my truth. And the thing is about both of these times, you know, whether it's the truth or my truth or the truth or my truth, neither of these things necessarily are the exact sort of like balanced way to approach life. Like you have to understand that some things are true for you and some things are universally true. And honestly, like if you just picked up your feet and let culture define where you're going, it wouldn't take you to where you have set out to go. And so he says, you have to redeem the time. You have to make the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. And then verse 17, it says this. It says, therefore. By the way, when the Bible says therefore, whatever comes before the therefore, like that is there for this. So the therefore means that was there for this. And so this whole time, he's been building up to these words. He says, therefore, yes, be careful how you live, not as unwise, but as wise. Yes, make the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And foolish here, it means like looking for a loophole or think that you're the exception to the rule. Here he's talking about, I mean, if you think that you're the exception to the rule, it could never happen to you, like you found the loophole, he's talking to you. So every so often, every month or 2 months or so, someone will come into the church and who doesn't attend here, who just comes in off the street. Sometimes they ask for money, sometimes they want advice, sometimes they want someone to pray with them. It always kind of varies. But we had someone come in a couple weeks ago, and they wanted to come for the AA that we host in the evenings. And as like, okay, well, we do have AA, and it is today. It's in like 3.5 hours, so you're a little early, but you should definitely come. And they're like, oh, well, what's the AA like? And so I was like, I told them, I was like, well, it's an AA for like young people. It's so people like mostly in their 20s and 30s who are coming to AA. He's like, oh, I'm not interested in that. I was like, oh, why not? You're like a young guy. Why don't you want to come to the AA here? He's like, well, I don't have to go to AA. Like, it's something that I need. I was like, oh, okay. It's And I'm not like court mandated to go or anything. I just like to go so I can hear other people's stories. Oh, like you want to hear other people's stories of like hope and how they got through it and be encouraged that way. He's like, no. Like whenever I go to AA, I hear people's stories that are way worse than mine. And then I realize that my problems aren't so bad. And I was like, oh my goodness. So I was like, so are you, let's say, are you an alcoholic? And he's like, yes, I am. And I was like, how long have you been an alcoholic? He's like, well, I'm this age, and I've been an alcoholic since I was about 19, 20, so, and I was like, okay. The people who are saying those things, telling those stories, are they your age? Are they older? It's like, oh, most of them are much older than me, which is why I don't want to go to a young person's one, because they won't have that same, like, I went to an AA yesterday, he was telling me, and the person got up and shared that they were drinking one time, and they killed someone, and I've never done that, and so I don't have problems like that person does. Like, my problems are way less than that. And so I know that my problem isn't as bad. And you know what he's saying? He's saying, I'm the exception to the rule. This doesn't apply to me. Like, I am the loophole. Like, whatever those consequences are that come from those choices, that'll never hit me. That's what he's saying here. He says, therefore, do not be foolish. Don't think you're the loophole. Don't think you're the exception to the rule. If life generally functions a way, it'll most likely function that way for you too. Don't just pick up your feet and let life take you wherever. Don't live sort of foolishly and whatever happens, happens. Don't give your time away. Don't be foolish. You aren't the exception to the rule. Eventually, it'll catch up to you. Therefore, do not be foolish. Don't think you're the exception to the rule. Don't look for the loophole. But understand what the Lord's will is. Now, this idea of like understanding what the will of the Lord is. It doesn't really feel that helpful at first, because if you don't understand, just him telling you understand, it doesn't feel that helpful. He's like, I don't really understand. Great, understand. Not helpful, but thank you. But this word understand, it actually means to face up to or to put things that are separate together. It's like, all right, this belief over here is separate, and this is separate, and you understand that you're not the exception to the rule, and you're making poor choices, and so put these things together. Understand. It says face up to the facts. Face up to the fact that if life functions a certain way, it's probably going to function that way for you too. Face up to the fact that if you waste time now, you'll pay for it in the long run. Face up to the fact, put together the fact that small investments over a long period of time reap more benefits than large investments over a shorter period of time. Like, face up to these things. Like, understand these things. Like, chances are, in the back of your mind, you know these things are true. You know that wasting time now will you have to pay for it for a long time. You know that if you make unwise choices now, then you have to dig yourself out of those unwise choices. There are these things in your life that you, at your core, you know they're true, and you're still making this choice. What I need you to do is to put these things together. Face up to them. Live honestly. Be honest with yourself. Understand what the Lord's will is. If you're a person of faith, God promises that if you give your life over to him, then he will sort of guide you and give you in your heart an understanding of what he wants from you and for you. But he doesn't make you. You have to choose to say, yes, God, I will follow along. I will listen to what you have to say. Understand that God has a will for your life. Put it together, face up to it, and just follow it. Just give your life over to God. There's this guy named Roy Baumeister, and he's a social psychologist. In his book, Willpower, he talks about that willpower, making hard choices, doing the right thing, how you make choices. He says in his book, Willpower, the only sort of decision, willpower decision you can make every day without fail and continue to make it and not kind of wear down your willpower is you can make the choice to submit. You can't make healthy choices. You can't always choose to run. You can't always choose to avoid cookies. You can't always, not spend money and save money. Eventually, willpower wears down. But the only thing, the only choice you can make over and 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 over again for your entire life is you can make the willpower choice to submit. Say, I am not in control of my life and my world. I will submit my life to a power greater. And that is the only willpower choice you can make all day, every day of your life. What's funny is that that's the exact willpower choice God asks from you. Understand. Face up to. Submit your life to God. He wants you to have this flourishing, beautiful life. And so we have this question. I promised you a question. And this question will summarize these three verses. And we're going to break it down into a couple sections. The question starts out this way. What is the wise thing to do? What's the wise thing to do? And the wise thing to do isn't the legal thing. It's not the permissible thing. It's not the allowable thing. It's not the right or wrong thing. It's a different question. If the question was what's right or wrong, then we could disagree on that. Like we can get into arguments about that. People get into arguments about that all the time. But what's the wise thing to do? What's the wise choice to make? What's the wise thing to do with your time? What's the wise thing to do with your money? What's the wise thing to do in your relationships? That's a much deeper, better question. See, people don't, the average person in culture doesn't want religion, but they do want wisdom. What's the wise thing for you to do? Now, the second part of this question is this. What's the wise thing to do considering my past experiences? See, that my past is different than your past, different than their past, different than his past, different from her past. All of us have our own past experiences. What's the wise thing to do considering your past experiences? Where you've come from, how you failed in the past, how you've been strong in the past, how you've dropped the ball in the past, how you've spent your money in the past. What's the wise thing to do considering your past experiences? Like what's the wise thing for me to do considering my past might be different with the right thing for you, the wise thing to do for you considering your past. All of us have different strengths and different weaknesses, and all of us have had our weaknesses play out in certain ways. You know, alcohol is something obviously that it makes tons of sense, right? If someone has a history of abusing alcohol, then the wise thing for them to do considering their past experiences is just stay away from it. Someone who's never had a problem with it, it's like, okay, then that's them wrestle with their past experiences. Finances. What's the wise thing to do? Well, how have you handled finances in the past? Have you dug yourself a hole? Have you just said, charge it 1,000 times? Do Amazon boxes come to your house every single day? Okay. What's the wise thing to do considering your past experiences? Because your past is different than his past and her past and her past and his past. So you have to figure out what's the wise thing to do based on your past experiences. Do you know why history repeats itself in your life? It's because you don't make the wise, you don't ask this question considering your past experiences. If you find yourself with history repeating itself in your life over and over and over and over and over again, you can look forward, but before you look forward, look back. What's the wise thing to do considering my past experiences and my present situation? So you are somewhere. You are here. Chances are you've been in the mall. You've seen the thing. All right, I'm looking for, I don't know, Bath and Body Works. Why did I say that? I don't go to Bath. I've never been there in my life. Anyway, yeah, I'm going to get some lotion that smells like cucumbers and watermelon. No, I don't know. looking for your lotion that smells like baby skin. No, anyway, that got weird. Anyway, you have this arrow where it's like, you are here, right? And so you, what's the wise thing to do considering my past experiences and where I'm at now here if I'm being honest with myself? And that's actually harder than you may think. Like to be honest with ourselves about where we are is really, really hard. Like I see where I'm at. I'm honest with myself because it's, you know who the easiest person for us to fool is? Ourselves. That's right. Everyone else sees what's going on in our life sometime before we do. The people who are closest to you, the people who see, like if you know someone is spending too much money, if they're racking up credit card bills, you know who sees it first? The person right next to them. We are so good at deceiving ourselves. It's fine. It's fine. It'll work out. Yes, I've been here before. Yes, I've made a mistake before. But this time it'll work out. This time it'll be different. It'll be fine this time. No, be honest about where you are. Say, what's the wise thing to do considering my past experiences and my present situation? Do not deceive yourself. And the rest of the question is this. What is the wise thing to do considering my past experiences, my present situation, and my future hopes and dreams? You know, I have a friend who is passionate, passionate about helping people reach financial freedom. His name is Steve. Steve Athanas, he comes here and he just is passionate about helping people reach financial freedom. He talks people through it. It's this thing. It's just like the labor of love. He meets with people. He teaches classes on it. He loves helping people go from a place where they're kind of a mess financially, and then they're making wise choices and they're financially free. He loves it. But he says that as you walk through this process with someone, eventually they come to this point where they realize, all right, you know, I have these future hopes and dreams for my finances, and that's the goal. We've made a target on the wall. Let's go. Let's get after that target. And then they have to look at where they are and where they've been, and they have to realize that to get to square one, to get to like zero, it'll take years of discipline. And so that oftentimes at this point, people just get discouraged and they quit. Because I can't even like pursue my goals. I just have to get back to zero. I didn't realize that when I put that on my credit card so long ago, I would still be paying for it today. I just really liked it back then. He's like, yeah, you liked it. And you like it less now, but you're going to pay now for that thing back then. This is how it works. It's like there's no silver bullet in financial. He's like, there's no silver bullet. Like, you just have to, if you made a mess, you have to pick up the mess. It's just how life works. You are not the exception to the rule. You are not the loophole. You know, there's a quote by Viktor Frankl that says this. It says, between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. See, when you see something, you have a stimulus. When you want something, when you want to make a choice, there is a stimulus. There's something you see. There's something that's you're responding to it. And there's a space between the stimulus and the choice. How are you going to respond to it? Are you going to buy it? Are you going to say that thing? Are you going to do that thing? Are you going to take that action? This space right here between the stimulus and the choice is where growth and freedom happens. Because if you have had this stimulus before and you made this choice, and it didn't work out well for you, and this time you get the same stimulus, and there's a moment, there's a beat, there's a pause, and you make a choice. If you make the same choice, you miss an opportunity for growth. If you make a better choice, a wiser choice, that's where growth happens, and that's where future freedom comes from. What's the wise thing to do, considering your past experiences, your present situation, and your future hopes and dreams? If you ask this question about your choices, if you unpack, if you live your life this way, all right, what's the wise thing to do? What's the wise thing to do? With my job, with my relationships, with my finances, with my health, what's the wise thing to do? What's the wise thing to do? I know what my past is, I know where I'm at, and I know where my hopes and dreams are. And some people don't have hopes and dreams. And then those people just say, I'm just going to live, I'm just going to do what I want, I'm going to live any which way I want, it's going to work out, it'll be fine. They don't have a goal. They don't have a target on the wall. And so they end up hitting, because if you don't aim at anything, you always hit it. But what's the wise thing to do? What's the wise thing to do? And the thing is, like, if you don't ask this question, you're going to find yourself living in this sort of like loop, this cycle of, all right, I made this choice, I made this decision, and I messed up. It didn't go well. And the thing is, you know what happens, by the way, when you give sermons like this, you're talking about life and wisdom and making right choices and digging out of holes. Inevitably, what happens is someone thinks to themselves, oh man, this is so good. It's so practical. I wish my cousin was here, my uncle was here, my son was here, my daughter was here. Like, this would totally help this other person I know who has problems. Let's be honest, moment of truth. Anyone think that? I wish so-and-so was here for this today. Anybody? No one. Okay, a few honest people. Man, this is so, you're right. This just makes it so simple, but it's so profound. I wish so-and-so was here because they have problems. Yeah, okay. Okay. Let me ask you this week. You have some homework. Ask this question. Whenever a decision comes up, ask this question. I'm not even asking you to make a different change in your life. I'm not asking you to change anything. Just ask the question this week. Just ask it. Say, all right, I have this thing come up. I can purchase this thing. I can do this thing. I can eat this food. I can whatever. What's the wise thing to do, considering my past experiences, my present situation, and my future hopes and dreams? What's the wise thing to do? What do I need to face up to? What is God telling me? What is he leading me towards? And I just need to put these things together and face up and be honest about where I'm at. The thing is, if you are in this moment, you're like, I don't want to ask the wise thing. I don't want to figure out what God wants for my life. If I ask that, I might not get to do this thing that I kind of want to do, or I can't be in this relationship, or I can't buy this thing. And then you know that sometimes you don't have your best interest at heart. Sometimes you are your own worst enemy. If you're talking about, I don't really want to ask this question about my life, you already know that sometimes you don't have your best interest at heart. And you need this question. You, not your cousin, not your aunt, not the barista, not your car mechanic, you need to ask this question in your life. And by the way, if there's someone you're like, I wish my son could hear this, I wish my cousin could hear this, we video every single one, and you are always free to send it to them. And do you know that we actually have more people watch this on video than we do in person? You know that? We can look at the stats all over the world in other countries. You know, people who are out, you know, serving our country in the armed forces, they watch. We get notes back. Like, we have more people watch this every week on video over the internet than we do in person. And so, if someone sends you this video, it's not because they're telling you you've made mistakes in the past. It's because they love you. Okay? This is a love note to you. So if anyone shares this video with you, it's because they love you. And they want you to live wise from now on. All right? Okay. Good talk. So the metaphor that God uses for himself most often in the Bible is that of a father. That God the Father calls himself Father. And this is a different sort of metaphor based on what your father was like. Some of us had great fathers. I had a great father. My father worked very, very hard to provide a life for us and to guide us and to give us wisdom and love us. I had a great one. But some of us didn't. Some of us had bad fathers. Some of us had absent fathers. And so this idea of God as father feels distant or disconnected, or it doesn't really equate well for us. And we hear this God as father, and it feels like nails on a chalkboard a little bit. You're like, oh my goodness, God as father. I don't even know what that means. What does it even mean? My father was never around, or my father was terrible. This is one of those moments when God is fathering you. Because what does a father do? A father protects, a father guides, a father provides, a father gives wisdom, a father, you know, creates guardrails so that you don't go off and hurt yourself. A father is there for you. A father talks you through the difficult things of life. This is what fathers are supposed to do, and this is what God is doing for you. He's saying, I don't want you to make mistakes. I don't want you to ruin your life. This whole thing started with do-over. It's a life mulligan, and I had such incredible, gut-wrenching, heart-breaking things people told me, and I wish that someone had walked all of us through this earlier, because some of those do-over moments, some of those life mulligan things, it might not have happened if we had asked what's the wise thing to do, considering my past experiences, my present situation, and my future hopes and dreams. I mean, those do-over life mulligan moments may not have ever happened if we had asked that question. If we had done what Paul says, and he just says, man, face up to what the will of the Lord is. Face up to what God wants for you. Face up to what God's best life for you is. We cannot go back. It doesn't exist. It's a nice exercise. We don't get life mulligans. But we can make better choices today. You've heard me say it before. You hear me say it again. The best time to plant a tree was 30 years ago. The second best time to plant a tree is today. So your homework is this. Ask the question. You don't have to change anything. Don't break up with anybody. Don't change your spending habits yet. Just ask the question. This week, and we'll get to the breaking up next week. It's fine. We'll get there. What's the wise thing to do, considering my past experiences, my present situation, and my future hopes and dreams? Let's pray. God, thank you that you love us enough to want us to flourish here and now. You promise that if we pursue you and if we pursue Jesus, your son, and we try and live by him and we give ourselves over to you, then you will guide us and you will let us know what is best for us, and you will show us your will. And God, sometimes you show us what your best for our lives is, and we just keep going and we ignore it. And we just need this moment where it's like we get snapped to reality. And we say, God, what am I doing? But this whole time, you're just so faithful, God. You just give us your will. You give us your wisdom. You give us your wisdom. You're ever present. You're always pursuing us. You love us deeply. You're just you're coming after us. And you're just constantly so consistent, God. And so in ways that we don't even understand and we don't appreciate, you're consistent and you're always available to us and you're giving us your best will. And so, God, for that, we just say thank you. In this one moment when we're thinking about how consistent you are, we say thank you for it. We are beyond grateful for that. God, in your word, you give us these wise things. You give us these helpful things. You help us live this flourishing life here and now. And God, you promise us that life to the full and freedom indeed, but some of this is based on us living a life, not just a decision to follow you once, but a decision to follow you for our entire lives. So God, remind us this week to ask this question. If there's a decision coming up, if in a relationship, spending money, something we eat, something we do, something we're going to say, an action we're going to take, God, remind us. God, give us the wisdom and the clarity of thought to be honest about where we are today. God, if we're going through life and we don't have hopes and dreams, and I know that you have hopes and dreams for us, so you give us your hopes and dreams for our life, and that'll be our new target on the wall. We are dependent on you, God. We rely on you, and we rely on your leading and guiding us. These are your words. So thank you. Thank you for the way that you're fathering us, that you protect us, you guide us, you give us your insight, you give us your will. You create a barrier so that we don't go off. Thank you for the way that you love. Thank you for the way that you give us your wisdom. We're just so grateful. We love you in your name. Amen.